Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everybody. Great way to start. 3, 2, 1.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
I think the unprecedented indictment of a former president of the United States for a campaign finance issue is an outrage. And I believe the American people will see this for what it is.
It's the Ricochet Podcast with Peter Robinson and Rob Long. I'm James Lilacs, and today we talk to, John Yoo. Anything more I need to say about that? No. So let's have ourselves a podcast.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to
Welcome, everybody. This is the Ricochet Podcast. It is indeed. And it's episode number 636. If you would just do us a... little favor and go over to ricochet.com, take a look, join up. You can be part of the most stimulating conversations and community on the web. And we mean that. It's the place you've been looking for. If you want to go someplace where there's a code of conduct and people don't act like idiots under false names and throw bricks at each other all the time, it's a haven sometimes. No, it's a haven all the time. I'm James Lilacs here in Minneapolis, which is my haven, even though the skies are slate gray and we're expected to get 5 inches of snow.
Damn.
And Rob is in New York, where I imagine it's fine and people are strolling about with with a expectation of
chilly
a wonderful
day.
New York
chilly
spring.
Rainy day, James.
Really yeah. New York's great in the chilly
just so
rain,
you make you feel better.
Peter, I understand, has not been glimpsing the sun for days in California, but now it's out. And so we're all in a grand mood. We've seen the end of March. We've got the hope of spring and April and taxes ahead of us. What's there to do? Well, naturally, we're going to have to talk about the indictments, all 30, 34 of them. But John Yoo is going to be along shortly to discuss these things because Bog knows what I can say about them. We could discuss the other events of the week. I think the only thing really that stands out right now, days later, after the horrible shooting in Nashville, is the argument about whether or not this manifesto that the shooter left behind should be released. Usually, people say no. No, don't give them any publicity whatsoever. But then there's the argument that says, well, there might be something to be gleaned from this. As a matter of fact, there was something to be gleaned from Ted Kaczynski's manifesto. There are things that tell you the intellectual temper of the times, even though they may be written by somebody who's plainly daft. What do you guys think? Don't leap to the mic.
No, I suppose. I'm thinking back to the Unabomber. What year was the Unabomber? That was a long time ago now, James.
It seems.
Yeah. Maybe you'd better just give us 2 sentences on who the Unabomber was. We're going to have lots of
listeners who don't remember. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber University, an airline bomber, I think is what it was a guy with aviator glasses, according to the description that was out there for decades. It turns out he's a guy living in a cabin who was bashing out these manifestos about what the machine age, the computer age, the technocratic age had done to humanity and civilization. Some of his ideas have been taken up by people who say... he had a point. He just went about it by planting bombs and killing people and taking off their fingers and the rest of it. I think it's David Gelertner. Was it Gelertner?
Yes, David. Right. David
Gelertner. He was a victim.
Right. He lost a digit or two to the Unabomber. And it's a fascinating tale because Kaczynski was a very smart man, obviously twisted, but that doesn't mean that you look at what he said. He's not talking about snakes and ravens coming out of a hole in the earth to devour the soul. I mean, he's talking about issues that we're still grappling with. So, yes, I mean, my argument is I'd like to see the manifesto, not to give the person any publicity, but to just understand the tenor of the times when it comes to what's rattling around the brains of some of these people.
Mm-hmm. On the Unabomber, I have a question that we will not be able to answer. Well, you can answer yes or no, I suppose. But I want to set up a conversation for a future show. Does either of you understand, I mean, even at a rudimentary level, does either of you understand artificial intelligence?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Do you understand it well enough to understand why some serious people, including Eric Schmidt and Henry Kissinger, and it is a strange duo, but Eric Schmidt used to run Google. Henry Kissinger, of course, is still with us at the age of 100, still writing. And they tell us that AI is very, very dangerous. Do you understand enough about it to know why?
Yes.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm in favor of shutting the whole damn thing down now. And I'm almost in favor of...
Give us one paragraph on why?
The smarter it gets, it has absolutely... There's no reason that it has any investment whatsoever in the continuing existence of humanity. It's utterly irrelevant to it. There's no reason to expect that what comes out of it at the end of it is anything other than inimical to the human creative spark and human imagination and ingenuity. We don't need it.
So
and I'm a big tech guy. I'm a big yes, bring it on. I'm a Star Trek. Give me my flip phones. Give me
ubiquitous
computers, all of that stuff. I do, but this...
Infinity and beyond is our point, James.
You cannot tell me that this has not advanced... The advancements that we've seen since we started just hearing about this, the rapid pace of it is... Hold on, stop, wait, slow it down before something happens. Rob, where do you stand on this? I know you're not the banned TikTok paranoid worried guy, but I don't like this. I don't like this.
I'm a fatalist, though. I don't think that you can go back. I don't think you can put the toothpaste back in the tube, as they say. So, I mean, I feel like we have to figure out a way to live with it. And I just think that living in general and being a human and making decisions and being autonomous and having your, you know, human natural citizen sovereignty is just going to take a lot more work going forward. I think we've kind of been sleepwalking on it for a while. And we've thought of it. We are sort of looking for like, well, what are the things I don't have to think about anymore? And I don't think that you can ever not think about your own freedom and your own freedom of choice and thought and speech and, you know, just your sovereign rights as a citizen.
Does this strike you as a society that's in the mood for more work?
Well, the problem for me is that if you attempt to ban something like this technology, then the only people who will use it will be people who are smarter than you are, and they'll continue to use it, and we won't know it.
I agree.
And so there's no banning is not a possible. It's not part of the decision. Array. So what's the decision rate? It may just have to be that we do more work. I mean, you know, this is kind of a human problem. Definitely it's a modern cultural problem, right? People are looking around and saying, like, just think about people trying to lose weight. Like if you just go on email or TikTok and just say, Instagram's filled with weight loss infomercials, right? Basically. And they kind of all say, you know, it's a lot easier than you think. It's actually a lot easier than you think. And everybody knows, no, it's not. You just have to eat less. And that's hard for a lot of people, including me.
And move more.
Right. And move more. That's who wants to do that? Isn't there an easier way? And the truth is that some things aren't easier. We just have thought, we've convinced ourselves that they are, they should be, or like, morally, I shouldn't have to do this or that. And the truth is that no, like some things are always going to be hard. And it's always going to be hard, especially as the world gets more busy and noisy, and there's more intrusions into our privacy just because everybody's closer to us than they ever were before. It's just going to be harder and harder and harder to be a sovereign citizen, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. Means it's better.
Let me give you a test, Rob. You're a citizen of Manhattan. This is not a test.
Yeah.
This is not a test. This is a choice. Here's the choice. Within the next 5 to 10 years, you may have no traffic in Manhattan. I'm not saying no cars. I'm saying no traffic jams. No trouble parking, no traffic jams. Traffic moves smoothly. There's never another instance of, what did it used to be called before Rudy made it illegal? Gridlock. There's never another instance of gridlock. All right. Here's the price you have to pay. You will never be allowed to drive a car on the island of Manhattan again. Do you take the deal?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, the interesting thing about the traffic, I mean, the specific issue with traffic in Manhattan, it's interesting because a lot of these streets have been essentially slimmed by two lanes because of the outdoor, you know, COVID, you know, little dining huts, and no one has really complained about it. It's more, I think that here's where I thought you were going with it, that everyone can have the most efficient commute ever in your car. And the only thing you have to do is give up your right to choose your route and for your right to keep your destination private. Because if the giant auto brain knows where everybody's driving, it will be able to route us in the most efficient way. And the benefit of that is that actually we have these beautiful cars that seem to work and they are really great and they're much more efficient in a lot of ways to get you exactly where you want to go than a train or a bus, let's be honest. The downside is that there's a million cars going different ways. There's no organizational structure to any of these sort of packets of people rather than packets of information. So Waze is.
So maybe we'll need to. Here's the thought. Maybe we can invite David Gelertner. David and I were exchanging emails about AI just the other day. And he said there are many benefits, and he listed some benefits. And of course, I'm not a founder of the discipline of computer science the way he is. Some of it I couldn't follow. But he said, here's the risk. I'm pretty sure that in 20 years, you won't even have the option of driving your own car.
That's where this is going.
All right.
When they come for your rights, right? When people come for your sovereignty and for your freedom, they're going to sound very reasonable. They sometimes come in jackboots and you know, brown shirts. Sometimes, but mostly they come in friendship, offering convenience.
Yes,
and that is, I think, the thing we have to fight against.
The incremental diminution of liberty and agency will always be done by promising an ease and a certain removal of responsibility. Who wants to plan their own trip to get across Manhattan when you could have the auto brain do it for you? And of course, the information is going to be encrypted. Nobody's ever going to find out that. We all know how that works. Hey, listen, one of the things you can do when you're in Manhattan is, you know, drive around and see all the businesses that aren't open anymore. But there are some that maintained their businesses through COVID. And are you one of those, perhaps, somewhere in the nation listening to this podcast? If you own a small or medium-sized business that kept employees on payroll throughout COVID, you may have cash, a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit, it's a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee, and now more businesses than ever can qualify. The experts at RefundsPro.com specialize in cutting through all that red tape of qualifying for the government program. And you know, if it's a government program, there's lots of red tape. They slash right through it. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. And even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. Absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund. So there's no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. RefundsPro.com has already helped hundreds of businesses. So don't lose the refund you're owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at RefundsPro.com. That's refunds with an S, pro.com. And we thank RefundsPro for sponsoring this, the Ricochet Podcast.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now we welcome back to the podcast. Oh, do I just saw who we got?
Yeah, him again.
John Yoo. John Yoo. You know, he likes McDonald's and he likes Spam Musubi. And apart from these appalling culinary tastes, he's a pretty smart guy and we love him. He teaches legal stuff at Berkeley and is attached to AIE and Hoover, et cetera, et cetera. And he's been here in the Ricochet podcast a lot and Powerline podcast and so forth. Never seems to wear out his welcome because he's always a cheerful presence and he's a smart guy and he knows his stuff. And hey, John, how are you today? 34 indictments. Wow. What do you think?
Guys, can we all tell the listeners the real truth? Is that now we can reveal Rob Long has been on this grand jury this whole time. And he picked, of the many charges you could bring against Trump, he picked the one that would make the best sitcom.
The worst sitcom. I mean, you know, as the resident, you know, anti-Trumper here on this podcast, you know these charges are stupid when even I know they're stupid. Or am I stupid about that too, John?
I think that this is a terrible case to be. Even if you wanted to get Trump, you would not want this case to be brought.
Even if you can take that for granted in the case of Mr. Long. But so John, what do we know about it? Are you pretty tell us what we know and tell us why you think we know it. Are you pretty satisfied that the reporting on this is good, that the DA's office is leaking intentionally and accurately and so forth?
Well, I think the DA's office is leaking like a sieve, but it's not just the DA's office. Mm-hmm. You've also got reporters staking out the courthouse and watching the witnesses coming in and leaving the grand jury room. Plus, you've got witnesses who come out on TV and start telling everybody what they testified about, which you're not really supposed to do. But there's no way to stop people from doing that in New York City. So I think we have a pretty good picture of what this is going to be, which is it's going to be about this $130,000 hush money payment by Donald Trump in 2016 during the campaign to former, or I guess current, I don't know, porn star Stormy Daniels. I thought Rob fingerprints were all over this, so to speak. I mean, he would, of course, want the main character in this to be called Stormy Daniels, but
no, of course.
He has much better ones.
Yeah. Yeah, it does have the ring of the kind of hack writing that I would do. Yeah,
a little on the nose.
So just can we just get clear for a minute, John? I know everybody wants to jump in, but I just need to know. It's not illegal to pay somebody hush money, right?
Right. This is the problem about this prosecution is, right? If it was illegal to pay people for non-disclosure agreements, right? Half of Hollywood and half of Wall Street be in jail right now. Yeah. There's nothing illegal about that. Nothing illegal about that. So what the DA here is trying to say is that Trump mischaracterized. It's like doing your own personal taxes. He tried to charge this to the business and not to himself or not to his campaign. That's the charge. But that charge ran out. He had 2 years to bring that after it happened. That should have been brought by 2018. And it wasn't. That's the real problem Bragg has, is in order to try to stick it in now, right? 7 years later, he has to claim this is really a felony. Not just any felony, but it's a felony because Trump essentially gave himself a campaign contribution by paying off.
Hold on, stop. I want to sum up to this point before you go. If indeed he did do what Michael Cohen said and claim hush money as legal payments on his somewhere in his huge accounting book, that would have been a misdemeanor and the charges would have had to have been brought within 2 years. So as of 5 years ago, first of all, who would bring a misdemeanor charge of this kind anyway? As far as I can tell from reading around in New York, they don't charge that stuff. They don't worry about it. They have worse problems. But it would have had to have been brought 5 years ago. Okay, gone. Can't do that. So therefore, to indict Donald Trump, we must do what exactly? Explain this, which is everywhere being called, I love this phrase, a novel legal theory.
Untested/rejected/unconstitutional, I would say, legal theory.
Okay, can you explain it? Yep.
Yes. So in New York, you can claim it's a felony. And a felony is a crime, a serious crime, or punishable by a significant jail time. So most things you've heard of, like murder, rape, assault, robbery, those are felonies. Those have a longer statute of limitations. To try to get it to that level, the DA here, Alvin Bragg, has to say, okay, Trump cooked the books to conceal some other crime. That is a felony in New York law. The problem is, you know, that's Rob's question, is what's the other crime, right? What he did here is not illegal. So this is where it really gets into the gymnastics, the acrobatics, is he says, Trump violated the election laws.
Right.
Not the New York state of the United States. He violated federal election law. And then it gets even, are with me here? This is when you have to take this long to explain to someone what the criminal charges are.
You're already in trouble.
You're already going free, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So then what he has to say is, oh, when Trump paid $130,000 to Stormy Daniels during the campaign, he was really making a campaign expenditure to stop bad press getting out about him.
On account of, how does that, oh, to stop bad press.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So
because no one would have ever imagined that Trump would have ever paid. It would have been so shocking to hear that Donald Trump paid a porn star off. It's like, I'll say a Big Mac.
Well, see, Rob, this is where Rob should have been a criminal defense lawyer, because right. Trump's great defense to this charge is, I do this all the time.
Yeah.
This is not about a campaign. I've got thousands of women I've paid millions of dollars to over the years.
I've been reading about this the last 2 days, obviously. We have been here before. This case has already appeared in court, not with Donald Trump and Stormy Daniels, but with former senator and vice presidential candidate John Edwards and Riel Hunter. Essentially, he paid her off. He used campaign funds. They took him to court, and he was acquitted.
That's what this theory, that you're giving yourself an illegal campaign contribution by paying someone hush money, has never been accepted by any court, as far as I know. And the only time it was put to the test was with John Edwards, and the jury acquitted him. Because the claim is, this is not a campaign expenditure. This is just something any normal person would not want out there in public, and they would have paid it no matter what, whether they're running for office or not. Campaign contribution. So, for example, you can't take your campaign funds and spend them on stuff you do every day anyway. You can't like pay your home mortgage off with campaign funds. Although I don't know if Hillary tried that one, she might have. But you can't use your campaign funds to put your kids in fancy private schools or pay for your dry cleaning and your dinners and lunches and everything. So Trump's defense is going to be, as Edwards' defense was, I would have done this anyway. It didn't matter if I was running for president or not.
When you mention Hillary, though, wasn't there something about her using money to buy the Steele dossier and writing it off as legal expenses when it was actually a campaign expense? I heard something about that.
Yes. No, I do think people who are claiming this is unjust prosecution have a point. And this is what gets to the unconstitutional point of this, is at least in the case James is mentioning, at least in the case that Rob's mentioning, the federal government, the Justice Department, investigated. They decide not to charge Hillary. They charged Edwards and lost. The prosecutors remember this. They're not going to push this theory.
Right.
This case was also prosecuted before. This is why Michael Cohen, right? Prosecutors brought these charges for this exact conduct here against Michael Cohen, because he was the bag man. Michael Cohen was Trump's lawyer, and he apparently transmitted the money. The U.S. attorney went after him, and he pled guilty. Right, he's the bag man. So the problem here is, and the reason why I think it's unconstitutional, is state prosecutors can't go around saying, I'm going to get you for federal law. Only federal prosecutors, the Justice Department, prosecutes federal law, and only state prosecutors prosecute state law. So think about what happens. This is a question I ask my friends, you know, my liberal friends, which is most of my friends, I guess, is, what are you going to do when the shoe's on the other foot? Now, every Republican DA in Texas and Florida is going to start investigating the Biden family.
Right.
That's exactly my first thought. Do they really think the House of Representatives can't find anything in the Hunter Biden laptop that would enable them to bring charges against the President Biden?
No, absolutely not.
Less, it's peddling on its face.
It seems on its face. Okay, so and you're so how do your friends reply, John? How do your liberal friends, your friends, liberal friends, that's a redundancy. How do your friends reply?
It's sort of the Trump exception rule, I think of it is.
Yeah, that's what it
Trump is such a danger that it's worth breaking all these rules or not worrying about the future consequences on institutions to get him. Because he's a unique danger to democracy.
But at the exact moment, right now, the Manhattan District Attorney was responding to a letter from the House Republicans. House Republicans have said, hey, listen, we want to know what's going on in those grand jury rooms. We want to know what you're looking at. And he responded in a letter that said basically, hey, buzz off. I'm a district attorney. You have no power over
you
me.
You have no standing here.
You have no, and yet at a week later, he's meddling into federal jurisdiction. So, I mean, I say this as a New York resident. Meanwhile, there's a lot of bad guys on the street. Like the Manhattan district attorney is not supposed to be, I actually believe, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know that much about federal election law, but it always seems to me that FEC violations are how you get the person that you don't like. And it's usually over something like this or some kind of quasi ill-defined number. And, you know, Dinesh D'Souza, whatever you think of Dinesh D'Souza, should not have been wearing an ankle bracelet for FEC violations. That's it. It does seem like this is not only BS, but a waste of time.
Right. And this is why we actually say federal government, you're in charge of your crimes. State DAs, you're in charge of your, you know, state crimes, because Rob is reacting the way any misbegotten resident of New York City, being from Philadelphia, I can say that, a misbegotten resident of New York City should react, which is, we put this guy into office to make our city safer. How is this advancing any kind of priorities that help New York City at all? Right? And if federal prosecutors want to charge Edwards and not charge Hillary, well, we can hold them responsible. But when you start saying, oh, the state DA in New York is going to start prosecuting people for campaign laws, there's no way for us to hold anybody accountable who's responsible. That's why I think this is a very dangerous precedent, because this is not just going to be, right, candidates for the presidency. What if this becomes part of the standard operating procedure for political operatives in every campaign? Why not do this to senatorial
candidates,
presidential candidates? And we're Costa
Rica. We're Honduras. This is a banana republic. This is a third
world. There's no way for the nation. You know, we vote for the president. There's no way for us to hold Alvin Bragg accountable.
Right. So, John, let me sum up and ask, you said it, but I want to hear you say it really quotably. The indictment rests on a legal theory which is, at a minimum, tortured. There's a jurisdictional overreach which is likely unconstitutional. And in prosecuting the case, in trying the case, the Manhattan DA will be required to rely on the testimony of an admitted liar. All three of those are correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is it conceivable that such an indictment would have been brought against anyone other than Donald Trump?
I can't imagine it.
Okay.
I can't imagine it.
So those of us who are saying that this is really a grotesque misuse of the legal system, that this is a political and ideological prosecution, are simply correct. We're not overheated. We're not being hysterical. That's simply what has happened here, right? Even the judicious John Yoo would say that.
Yeah. I mean, you have a guy who was elected to office as a Democrat in New York City, one of the most bluest of the blue states, who said he was going to go after Trump. And right, that is a violation of everything a prosecutor should do. It's long been a principle of prosecution. You don't go after a person. That's how the Soviets would try to run criminal justice. Right? I think Beria said, I think he was the head of Stalin's Secret Service. Right? He said, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That's the worst of what a justice system is. It's not even a justice system. Our justice system is you have prosecutors who judge what is the best case to bring to protect the public. And these charges, based on this, the facts as we know them, is so weak. It only reinforces that it's political. This is the other political point I'd make. It's not really a political point. It's legal slash political point is by being first, Bragg is going to give Trump enormous ammunition to rightly attack the prosecution as politicized. Right. It's going to cloud all the other, I think, much more meritorious investigations that are going on right now into January 6th or classified documents of Mar-a-Lago or
the Georgia case.
District attorney down in Georgia. Right. Trump, I think, is going to, I think I saw a poll today right, saying that a 2-to-1, I think Americans think this prosecution is political. That could, right, infect all the other prosecutions to come.
But there are people who don't mind that it is. There are a lot of, I mean, and I've been talking to people who just, it's like, well, this may not be the thing, really. It's those other things. It's mostly January 6th when he told everybody to go and break in and kill people. But you didn't. And we'll get to that in a second here. But you know, this will do in the absence of anything else. This will do because he's just kind of guilty in a meta sense as well as a micro. So, you know, they get him on this, then they get him on it, which to me is a dangerous way to look at the law. I mean, it's like finally comeuppance after all these years of the walls closing in and the end is coming and the rest of it. You know, we didn't get him on being a Putin stooge who took money from the Kremlin. So we'll get him on this and that'll be fine because in the karmic sense, it works, which is really not a good way to run a republic.
But two thoughts about that. One is people don't realize in this country, we don't have many police. We don't have a lot of prosecutors. Americans willingly comply and cooperate with law enforcement because Americans have great faith in the integrity of our justice system. If they start by polling 2-to-1, thinking our law enforcement are political, then that means we're going to have a lot of trouble enforcing our laws and maintaining law and order in the country. And then the second thing is, and James is repeating what I, you know, have hear from my friends when I argue with them about this. And my response is, think about the future incentives you're creating. Think about what you're doing to the presidency. Who's going to want to be president in the future? And then when they have to make tough decisions, do you want them factoring into their minds, oh, someday I'm going to get sued, investigated, my family's going to run up millions of dollars in legal fees because I have to make a tough call, right? And then you're going to subject presidents, senators, to members of the House, cabinet members, to the whims of any elected prosecutor anywhere in the country. Is it really the way we want to run a government?
They know. If they don't know it specifically, they know it instinctively. That if indeed that happens and the Republicans start to go after the Democratic candidates, that they will have an entire media apparatus on their side to show how this is baseless, this is politically motivated, and these people are just being mean to people who are blameless, because generally the people who will come from the left will be blameless. They're not motivated by avarice by any sense. They're not motivated by power. No, they're motivated by doing the good things that need to be done. Whereas we know that the people on the right will be the ones who are justifiably investigated because they're corrupt in essence, in philosophy, and dealings, and the rest of it. And there's, you know, what will it take to get a media to turn on somebody on the left if they're investigated? No, they will defend them up and down. The Hunter Biden case was just an example of that. Rob, you had something else to add to that? I was going to go, oh, wait a minute, hold on a second here. I forgot. Should we make John sit through a commercial or should we do a nice thing?
No, John's got to sit through a commercial.
Yeah, John's not busy. He's got to sit through a commercial.
He's got nothing to do. Look at him. He's just sitting around with his headphones on.
You know where I am? You guys will laugh like this. I'm in my mother's retirement home where I'm eating retirement food, which I really like. So I'm getting ready for retirement. I was like, can I put my name down now using the retirement home gym? I love being in a retirement home. I'm like, how did I not know about this? How young can I be before I sign up?
How is your mom, by the way?
She's great. She's turning 85 this weekend.
Oh, man.
And she was still practicing medicine until COVID stopped her and she couldn't go to the hospital anymore. But I like this retirement. It's like being back in college, but everybody's 50 years older.
Listen, I met your mom. Your mom versus COVID, I feel sorry for COVID. She should have been in the hospital. She should have been working.
I turned 85 the other day, but what I was doing, I was turning up the thermostat because it was cold in the house. It really was.
Nice.
But now we're getting into the weather where it's going to be nice. Even though it's just clammy here in New York, sounds like it's a little bit shy of warm. It's warmer weather is coming. And you're going to spend time outside, which is glorious, and see all the green as it bedecks the world anew. Gather with your loved ones outside. Have a, you know, something sparkling or something with a little nip to it as you know, we have the fires. And then the sun just doesn't go down until 9, the great time of the year. It's all ahead of us. And don't you want to enjoy it more by making sure that you get a great night's sleep so you start the day rested? One of the ways that you can feel rested and refreshed is to use the softest, most luxurious sheets in the world, and they are from Boll & Branch. Boll & Branch is the bedding expert. They make the highest quality sheets with incredible craftsmanship. Each sheet is slow made for unmatched softness with 100% traceable organic cotton that gets softer with every wash. And, you know, if you take all my Boll & Branch spots and you cut up the little part where I give you my personal testimony, you will find that they are all different, and yet they're all the same. How can that be? That's because every week, of course, you wash the sheets, and every week they get softer. I don't know what sort of quantum physics is going on, but I know that they were great when I got them. And now years later, they wear like iron. They are just absolutely still the softest sheets I've ever had. They're bestsellers for a reason. And I have the signature hemmed sheets, buttery to the touch, superior softness, super breathable. And that's good because, you know, we're in that kind of season where you're cool one night and you're warmer the next. They're perfect for both times when the temperatures can ebb and flow. And they're loved by three presidents. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Update, newsflash. Believe it or not, they are now loved by four presidents. That's correct. They won over another president. And of course, they won over so many other people. They got more than 10,000 stellar reviews online. So rest assured, you'll sleep better at night with Boll & Branch sheets. They've been around for a long time. They've been sponsoring this podcast for a long time. We believe in them. We love them. And they succeed and prosper because they're the best. Starting now, you can get early access to their spring sale. Use the code RICOCHET to get 20% off at BollandBranch.com. That's Boland Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com. Promo code RICOCHET. Exclusions apply. See the site for details. And we do thank Boland Branch for sponsoring this, the RICOCHET Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now back to John Yoo, where we were asking him legal questions galore. You forgot when mentioning Bragg, of course, that he's Soros adjacent, which apparently is a way of completely delegitimizing any criticism that's made of the man, right?
So part of this is, look, I got no problem with people running for district attorney on a partisan platform. And I got no problem with Bragg saying to the voters of New York, to people like Rob, I'm going to stop prosecuting a lot of people, right? I'm going to start letting them back out on the street. You're going to love it. It's going to be great, right? But right, that is why he can only prosecute crimes under his own law, so that people like Rob can say, this has been a disaster. We're voting you out of office. Right. The problem is Bragg trying to reach out and interfere. And then we should neglect this part, not just with the treatment of an ex-president, but with the current front runner of one of the two major parties' elections for president. Not only is he punishing past presidents, but this is a DA in New York City directly, I think, interfering, and for the purpose of interfering with this prosecution, a national election. That's also something we should really be concerned about. And again, how can the rest of the country hold him, this DA in New York City, accountable for the way he is interfering with national issues?
John, can I go through another couple of legal explainers? Ron DeSantis tweeted last night, I'm quoting from his tweet, Florida will not assist in an extradition request. Ah. What's he talking about?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, but I don't think it's going to be necessary because what I've read is that Trump is going to surrender himself on Tuesday at the courthouse, right? Where he'll be, you know, fingerprinted. There'll be a mugshot. You know, I'm wondering whether he's going to have a happy mugshot or a defiant mugshot. I expect a non-smiling mugshot. And then he'll be presented to a judge and he'll be asked for his plea and there'll be a request for bail, which I assume would be granted. And then he'll come out onto the front steps of the courthouse, which I expect will be like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, that time he was on a WWF ring. You know, he walked into a World Wrestling Federation match and just sort of took over the ring. But if Trump had resisted, that's why right. What DeSantis is saying is
right.
Somewhat relevant, but not anymore, is suppose Trump had said, I'm not showing up, come and get me. Right. Well, New York can't send police to Florida. They'd have no authority in Florida. So the way it works is usually if you're being prosecuted and the defendant flees to a state, you can go ask that other state to arrest them for you and extradite them back. And it's a very routine thing, usually because we're one country. So the states are supposed to accept the validity of the demand for arrest and sending them back to the other state. But DeSantis, again, this is how this prosecution is corrupting the law. DeSantis was suggesting that he would not perform
that he gets,
his constitutional duty to send Trump to New York.
He gets to exercise his judgment on whether the indictment is valid in the first place.
Usually you don't do that. Usually you,
but
as
he,
a governor,
he could legally
it.
Do so? There's no, precedent
I,
for that?
I guess theoretically if someone was on completely trumped up charges, right? On things that aren't even really crimes. But no, you're supposed to basically do it automatically.
Okay. I guess what I'm getting at is the unprecedented nature of what's taking place is placing pressure on ordinary legal practice in all kinds of ways that we're just beginning to glimpse. Who would have conceived of a governor saying, wait a minute, I'm not so sure I'll extradite this guy if it comes to that. That was inconceivable 48 hours ago. And now Ron DeSantis has said it. Everybody sort of read it and moved on to the, it's just, okay. Next question. How do you get to, you've explained the novel legal theory. How do you turn that into a couple of dozen counts, which is what the New York Times is reporting, or 34 counts, which is what CNN is reporting right now? How do you get this multiplicity of counts?
Well, everybody's wondering whether there's more in there than just the Stormy Daniels hush money payments. You know, people are saying maybe there's hush money payments to other people. Again, as I was discussing with Rob, that actually helps Trump's case. The more hush money payments he made, you know, the better. Maybe he said, I've got this rotating, what do you call, line of credit at Silicon Valley Bank for people, for women to draw on every time. That's why the place went under. They ran out of money or something. But, you know, the more he did it, the more it was regular, the more he gets, you know, the more he gets out from under it. But look, the 30 indictment, if you're a prosecutor, this is how you would do it. Each time Trump made a payment to Cohen, that's an indictable count. Right. So suppose he made five of them. Suppose there were six changes to the accounting rules. Each of those is a count.
I see.
Every conversation he had with Cohen where he told him to do it, that could be a count.
Right.
And then you got conspiring as a count. So the indictment's under seal. All we really know is the leaks coming out of the DA's office and then the witnesses coming in and out. And we haven't seen witnesses, you know, who are involved maybe with the Trump organization or who might be involved with, you know, some other kind of crime. They all seem right. Michael Cohen came back several times. Trump sent this fellow Costello, who had been Cohen's lawyer, who now they had a breakup and now he testified against Cohen. He apparently went, all these people been on TV talking about, you know, what they were saying, which you're not really supposed to do. And so I think we have a pretty good idea what's in the indictment. So just the 34 counts, it's still really focused on the hush money, the bag man, Michael Cohen, and just reporting it under campaign finance law.
Rob.
Okay, so John, you're now appointed chief counsel to Donald Trump Incorporated. You're sitting in the Mar-a-Lago.
A job I've turned
there.
Down many, many times.
Yeah, right. You're sitting at the Mar-a-Lago patio, and you know he's having a Big Mac, and you're having your beloved McRib. You guys are like vibing, as the young people say. And you're telling him, look, it's not going to be fun. You're going to have to go up there, and you're going to get printed and all that stuff. But you're going to be able to, you know, you're Donald Trump. You'll be able to turn this into a media opportunity, right? Don't worry about this one. Your odds on this one are pretty good. What are you telling him to worry about? What are the many cases that he is now facing in Georgia, Florida, et cetera? What should keep him up at night?
So there, of the investigations, I think the one that would be easiest to prove against him would be the Mar-a-Lago classified documents, where apparently people have testified. We'll find out more, but apparently people have testified that Trump directed these employees of his to move classified documents around to hide them from searches. And
federal case special prosecutor, correct?
Yeah, that's under Jack Smith, a special counsel in Washington. The one that's the most important and serious, because I don't think the classified documents case is actually real, is all that important.
No motive has been established, right? Other than he wanted to frame stuff for restaurants.
Yeah, other than he wants to keep have some box of keepsakes, basically. But the one that's the most serious, but I think is harder to prove and harder to make out, but you could see the investigation is moving forward quickly on it, is a January 6th investigation. Did Trump conspire in any way with the people responsible for the riot at the Capitol, and or did Trump, how involved was he with efforts to pressure Mike Pence to block the electoral count?
All right, so you think I did not expect that you to say this, because my legal mind, and as you know, I have a steel trap legal mind. Full disclosure, I have not passed the bar in New York State, but I thought, when I look at this January 6th stuff, and I say this as the resident, you know, Trump hater, like the guy just, I mean, he's a jerk and he's, you know, you know how I feel about him, but this it's a very confusing crime. Calling up the sitting governor of Georgia and saying, find me the votes. Here's what I need. I need 11,973 votes. That seems to me to be a little bit more, you know, legal exposure. But then again, I haven't passed the bar in the state of California, as you know. So educate me.
Well, the thing about the Georgia case that's difficult is one. I mean, so again, we've got another problem. We've got a state officer trying to investigate a president for something that might really be a federal crime, not a state crime. So what's a state crime? Is it going to be some kind of fraud in the election? Well, what do these words, find me 110,000 votes, mean? Is he saying, you know, there's got to be a cache of legal votes that you guys have overlooked? Or is he really pressuring him to say, defraud the vote count, right? This is a question that's very difficult to prove. It depends on Trump's mental state. Does anybody really want to see a whole trial about Trump's mental state?
Good luck.
I mean, Trump, really?
But so, if I'm the prosecutor, I say, you know, you call the governor, you say, hey, listen, you make sure you count all those votes. I'm sure I have more votes. I know I had more votes. You better count them all, right? That's one thing. And I call and say, I need 11,400, whatever it is, number of votes. To actually know the number seems like, I don't know, that seems like that gun is smoking more to me than the January 6th stuff. But again, I have not, as you know, passed the bar in the state of Massachusetts.
So explain the your opinion on the January 6th.
January 6th, I think, has got more exposure because first, you know, everyone's focused on Trump gave this speech on the ellipse. Is it incitement to commit violence? I don't think it is. I think it is protected by the free speech clause. But that's not really where Trump is vulnerable. Where Trump might be vulnerable were Trump campaign officials texting, emailing, calling with whoever were the ringleaders of the violent attack on the Capitol? Were they talking to Trump about it? You only need the testimony of one or two people, say a Rudy Giuliani, for example, or what's her name? Kraken Woman, Sidney Powell, to say, right. Oh, I had a conversation with Trump. I told him there were these people who wanted to, you know, go into the Capitol and stop the vote count. And he said, yeah, thumbs up. It'll be beautiful, right? that's maybe all you need to get conspiracy that Trump was involved. Or the other possibility is, how much pressure did Trump put on Vice President Pence to stop the electoral count? Okay. Did he try to really coerce him? I think the reason why I think this is where there's a lot more vulnerability is we've got a lot, we can see in public a lot of what happened in Georgia, a lot of what happened in New York City. I mean, Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, recorded the phone call he had with Trump and released it, right? So
right.
There's a lot more facts that we don't know. But with January 6th, I think there's still a lot more to come. I don't think we really know much about what was happening inside the White House with Trump talking to campaign officials. We've not really heard Rudy Giuliani's story.
Wait. You don't think that the January 6th committee has already released every bit of damaging material, damaging to Donald Trump, that they possibly could?
But they didn't get the cooperation of people like Giuliani, a John Eastman, a Sidney Powell. That's what I think a prosecutor can do, which a congressional committee cannot.
He can subpoena John Eastman and put him under oath.
You could say, well, look, Rudy Giuliani pulls the same line he did with the congressional committee. He says, I'm not going to help you. I'm not appearing. Or Steve Bannon, right? Could have been a conduit too. And they just say, they stiff him. That's what Bannon did, right? He just refused to comply. Well, a prosecutor can throw your ass in jail.
You say that with relish, John.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the people who refuse to cooperate, you know, with a legitimate investigation, they should spend some time.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, can I ask, we're going to have to, I'm sure you and Richard are going to devote at least an entire law talk to this.
Well, you mean Richard will spend 45 minutes and then I'll spend 10 minutes trying to get him to stop.
Well, but I have one last question here, for me at least. I don't want to preclude Robert James from coming in again, but the politics of the thing, my heart sinks. I'll just tell you the way it looks to me, and I want to know if you agree. Rob has been anti-Trump for a long, long time. I thought he had three okay years. COVID hit, things went sideways, and then after the election, it was just outrageous. But even I have come around to the opinion that we've got to get rid of this jackass. He just needs to depart the scene. And it looked to me as though Ron DeSantis was going to be able to make the case to satisfy the Republican impulse for fighting back while still being intelligent and disciplined and honorable, and that Ron DeSantis was going to be able to deny Donald Trump the Republican nomination. It's gone. That's just gone. The Manhattan DA has so bungled this, from my point of view, has put together an indictment that when Donald Trump, I'm just looking at the news now, he's called the thing a total political witch hunt. And astonishingly enough, he is exactly correct. And the impulse to rally to Donald Trump, if only to protest the injustice, the damage to the American system, among Republicans is going to be overwhelming.
Yeah.
This jackass is going to get the GOP nomination.
So
Tell me I'm wrong.
No, so if you were to be really Machiavellian and suspicious of Democrats, who don't all operate as a single mind and in one plan, but maybe Bragg, by being incompetent, has done the biggest favor you could have done to the Democratic Party, because you could say, maybe this is the turning point when Trump sewed up the nomination.
Exactly. What I'm afraid of.
And then, meaning Joe Biden will win re-election.
Even Joe Biden could defeat Donald Trump. Exactly my fear.
So actually, maybe this partisan Democratic prosecutor in Manhattan has pulled a fast one on all of us.
It's entirely possible. But you know what? The thing of it is as much as I may think that this is a political prosecution and it's thinly sourced and it's a bad idea and the rest of it, it doesn't make me want to take a letter opener, gouge out an eye, and then shoot myself in the foot. There are other things. I'm not going to rally to this man and hope that he gets the nomination and surely lose just to show them what I think of their effort. No, the way that you show them what you think is to put somebody in power who is effective and who can undo so much of what has been done. and rally a whole part of the country to a new way of looking at these ideas that isn't tied to Donald Trump. Now, they already have got DeSantis branded as the fascist who's going to, you know, bring the jackboot reign over the rest of us. But that is a lesson that they're going to learn is not true. It's going to help Trump. But how many people like Peter are just want the guy to go away? But they're going to sacrifice absolutely everything in order to rally to his side.
But sadly, look at the polling out. In the last 2 weeks, while this has been going on, and we've all been talking about it, Trump has increased his lead over DeSantis, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. He's now over 50%, the choice of over 50% of Republican primary voters. And he's got, by 2-1, Americans believing this is a politicized prosecution. So
right, no, that's true. That's all true. Just with the short attention span that we have, and the likelihood that something else is going to happen, we'll see. We'll see. The great thing about it is, when something else does happen, we'll have John Yu back. John, thank you so much.
Wait, no, I'm not going. I'm staying on.
No, actually,
yeah, yeah, you're not busy.
Hey, John, really? Here's my real last question. Are you taking your mom up to Atlantic City to get in a little time at the tables?
Actually, you know what? We're going out for a birthday to a restaurant that has been in this town since 1790. I hope the food hasn't been there since 1790, but the building has been there. And the restaurant, I think it's been a continuously operating restaurant since the 18th century. So I'm expecting, you know, a hunk of venison and some, what do you call it? Succotash? Is that what it's called? And other culinary glories of the 18th century.
Yeah. Succotash and sarsaparilla. Well, enjoy yourself. It's been great as ever. And we'll see you the next time something breaks. John,
thanks,
Hill,
guys.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, John.
And he's in Florida, right? Did we get that? Is he in Florida?
Philly.
Oh, he's
Philly.
Oh, Philly. Right.
John, you can leave now, okay?
Yes. You can stop with the interjection so we can get on.
There he goes.
Cut the cord.
Cut the cord.
Use a bolt cutter, whatever you need, a lawn shears or something. Yes, indeed. Well, Philadelphia, big city. Rob, I have to ask you, when was the last time you were in Philadelphia?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's been a long time, actually. I mean, I drive past it all the time down to Baltimore, but I haven't been in Philadelphia in a long time.
Interesting. Well, when you drive, of course, you have to fill up from time to time. And as most people know, when you go to the gas pump at home, there's a couple of prices. There's the price that it says on the on the pump, but there's also that little 10% off you get because you shop here or you do this or you got this rewards program. I got that here in Minneapolis. It's great, 10% off. But you know what? I can't always go to that station. Sometimes there's another brand, and I don't have 10 cents off a gallon there. You know, you can't always fill up at the same place. Well, finally, there is an easy way to get cash back at multiple gas stations. It's called Upside. Upside is the incredible app for anybody who buys gas. With Upside, you can get cash back on every gallon of gas you buy. How? Well, Upside manages to offset inflated gas prices by giving you cash back on purchases. All you need to do is click on your handy-dandy little app and find gas stations that use Upside. And with all that savings, the only issue you're left with is, what do I do with my extra cash? Well, you know, as a family that runs convenience stores, you could go inside and buy some jerky. Love that jerky. To get started, download the free Upside app. Use the promo code Ricochet, and you get an extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas. An extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas. Now, next, claim an offer for, whatever you're buying on Upside, and then pay as usual with a credit or debit card, follow the steps in the app, and get paid. You don't have to worry about them selling your info to third parties either. It doesn't happen. So what are you waiting for? Join Upside users who are saving hundreds every year without any more effort than a trip to the App Store. Download the free Upside app and use the promo code Ricochet to get an extra 25 cents back for every gallon on your first tank of gas. That's an extra 25 cents back on every gallon in your first tank using promo code Ricochet. And we thank Upside for sponsoring this, the Ricochet podcast. Speaking of Ricochet, Rob is here to briefly tell you, I'm setting the time at 90 seconds here, about upcoming Ricochet promos, which is where people get to meet actual other human beings, not AI, not avatars, actual human beings. Or he won't. Or he's on mute.
Can you lip read, James?
I guess he's talking out. Yeah, he's on mute here. So he's going
to. Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, no, I was going to say, start the 90 seconds now. It's not Chat GPT, it's Chat IRL. I mean, that's my new, I'm going to trademark that. By the way, I invented that. Before we go, I want to say that we should thank Ricochet as a is a member organization. We want you to join and become a member. And one of our members, Randy Wivoda, is kind of helping arrange all these meetups and kind of organize them. And I think he's organizing especially the one in New Orleans, which I'm going to be in. That's part of the fun of Ricochet is that these are real people and they. They're real life people, and that's a rare thing. Real life, nice people too. So we got a New Orleans meetup in a couple of weeks away. It's for we'll be in the French Quarter for the French Quarter Fest. Go to ricochet.com, check it out. I'll be there. Charlie Cook will be there, and we're gonna have it's gonna be a big bash on Friday. So make sure you're there on Friday. And then following weekend, members in Stillwater, Minnesota, April 22nd, they'll be gathering. And then there's a mid-July one in Formation in Winston-Salem. It's being worked out. So if you're in the area and you have suggestions or whatever, you go there. Go to ricochet.com and check out Winston-Salem meetup. If you want to do that and you're not a member, there is only one way, and that's to become a member. So Matt Balser just sent notice about an annual German Fest extravaganza that will be happening in Milwaukee in late July, which actually sounds like a lot of fun. And she, and that's her Ricochet handle name. She's not the... and a preferred pronoun that's not the
president of China.
President of China. Wondering whether members want to be kind of funny if she was setting up for Beijing. If members want to do a meetup in the Pittsburgh area, because there's a Willie Nelson concert in the Pittsburgh area.
Wow.
I'm a big Willie Nelson fan. Not necessarily politically, but he's a cool dude.
Oh, he's great.
And it's a 90th birthday tour. He's 90. he probably only has another 30 years left. That's what's coming up. If they're too far away, if the dates don't work, there is only one way to fix that. Join Ricochet and just announce that you want to put one closer to you on a date that you can make it. And Ricochet members will arrive there ready to chat IRL. For details on all of this, including Ricochet, including members, including joining, including all that stuff, go to ricochet.com /events for events. There's a module in the sidebar on the website, and we want to see you. And if you're suddenly available to come to New Orleans, please do.
And if you go to ricochet.com, join and go to the member site and say, hey, how come nobody here is talking about baseball? You can start talking about baseball and people will chime in. You can start talking about anything. I go to the member feed all the time. I love reading what people are saying and thinking, dipping in and saying this or that. I would not participate in a baseball opening day thing because I don't care. But here's the thing. I'm glad baseball exists, and I'm happy that it brings people the joy that it does. And America would not be America without it. And I love those old Bugs Bunny cartoons where they bring back this sort of 1940s attitude of baseball that you think still pervades is still there under the modern corporate heart, that there's still the smell of the cheap hot dogs, the red hot. And yeah. The nickel beer and the creak of the wood and the stands and the rest of it and the men with their straw boaters and all those archaic things. You like to think that that's still sort of in the beating heart and soul of baseball.
Yeah.
Even though, I'm looking down the street here and there's a massive, massive stadium down there with a massive corporate presence and it's big and the brats are, $17.50 and the beer costs you an arm and or a leg. But I'm still glad it's there. And that was the point at which either of you would drop in and say, yes, I do too. But since you're obviously sort of having a sugar crash or a glucose crash, a caffeine crash.
Right? My coffee cup.
Speaking of sugar and glucose and medical, may I rise very briefly to speak in defense of modern medicine?
I didn't know anybody was attacking it, but do go on.
Well, actually, in my own mind, I sometimes attack it. It's too expensive. It's bureaucratic at all. Okay. I just want to say two things. All my life, I've had a slightly irregular heartbeat, and in the last 3 years, it's gotten a lot worse, and it's become a problem. And this past week, tachycardia was the problem. It would wake me up at 2 a.m. I'd lie there doing nothing, and my heart would be racing at 160 beats a minute.
Oh.
Unpleasant.
Yeah.
And this past week, I had something called a heart ablation, and I was wheeled into a room with more equipment than I have ever seen before in my life. I was wired up this way, that way, the other way. There, opposite the table was a huge flat panel television with pictures of my heart, kaboom, 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 and pictures showing each of the different leads they had on my body, showing heart activity. I think there may have been as many as a dozen professionals in the room. And they opened up a
bitten my leg and sent a catheter up to my heart and very carefully mapped the cells that were misfiring and cauterized those cells. And the following day, for the first time ever since owning one of these little watches that records my heartbeat, my heartbeat, the little 30-second test on the heart on the watch came back and said, my heartbeat is normal. So I don't know what the insurance company is going to get billed for that fantastically elaborate, but I can only tell you that it worked, that it's a procedure that's only been invented a couple of decades ago, that it would have been impossible without technology and specialization and all kinds of drugs and the new ability to read the electrical discharges in the heart, and it made my life better. I just want to say that in defense of technology and medicine.
A, we're glad. We're glad.
Yeah.
That's good. B, in defense of tech, we all have these little moments every day, not something as life-changing or as important as yours, where we realize how much of our existence is just improved in a little bit by this. And we wonder if the trade-off is okay. We think back to the days when we were kids and, you know, the phone rang two or three times a day, if that, and you didn't make long distance after 11 and the kids were out until the street lights came, you know, all those halcyon things. But then you think, we live at the apex of civilization right now if we really look around it. And that's in what you've talked about as one of the examples. C, you would like to think that most of tech these days, that the real brilliant people who are going into this want to do things like they did for you, not to just disrupt for the sake of disrupting, not to come up with a new way to spy and sell information and repackage nonsense, but that actually tech can still continue to be a force for good in our lives as it was for you. And D, if I ever have to have that happen, I'm going to ask them to put something else on the television screen because I'm not necessarily sure I want to watch that stuff.
Me neither.
I'd rather watch Columbo.
Columbo's great. I'd rather watch anything.
Well, except for that last episode they did in season 5 where Patrick McGoohan directed and they blew the whole thing up.
Look who I'm talking to.
One of the worst Columbo television I've ever seen in my life.
It's just I want to shout at Columbo every time I see a Columbo. It's Jack Cassidy. He did it.
Right, it's always
either Jack Cassidy or Robert Culp. They always did it.
Or Robert Culp. Or Patrick McGoohan, who had four spots like that. The problem is, of course, is that the more that you look at it now, you realize every single case that and that's why he's still a lieutenant after all these years, never got promoted. Every case, he tainted every case that he did. It's none of that stuff that would stand up in court. And if there's anything that relies on any sort of cigar ash to be around, he contaminates every scene that he goes to. Really, we didn't know that back then. We did. Anyway, Peter, glad you're great. And, you know, now you know that when the heart starts beating a little bit, it'll be a good thing.
Yes,
patriotic reason, exactly. A piece, you know, some marvelous example of pulchritude strolled by on a summer spring day.
Quiet. That marvelous example of pulchritude would, of course, be my wife.
There you go.
There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's why he's lived this long and he's buried this long. He knows.
Right.
Self-preservation instincts kick in. Hey, this podcast brought to you by Upside, by Boll & Branch and Refunds Pro. Please support them for supporting us. Good idea. And if you would leave that 5-star review, don't make it a 6-star review. You're thinking, I thought it was just 5 stars. No, you should go to Apple right now and give us the 6-star review just to see on Apple Podcasts. The reviews surface the show, as they say, and lets more people find us, which means more members, which means Ricochet prospers and grows into the next decade. And wait till you see the changes we got coming up. But for the moment, we'll see you in the comments at Ricochet 4.0. Next week, boys.
Next week.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.